Proverbs chapter 8, if you would, this morning, please. Proverbs chapter 8, we're going to read the whole paragraph or the whole chapter here. It's a rather long one, but we'll work at getting through the whole thing this morning. Proverbs chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, the Bible says, "Does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand. Beside the gates in front of the town, at the entrance of the portals, she cries aloud. To you, O men, I call, and my cry is to the children of man. O simple ones, learn prudence. O fools, learn sense. Hear, for I will speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right, for my mouth will utter truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are righteous. There is nothing twisted or crooked in them. They are all straight to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Take my instruction instead of silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, pride, and arrogance, and the way of evil, and perverted speech I hate. I have counsel and sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength. By me kings reign and rulers decree what is just. By me princes rule and nobles all who govern justly. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. I walk in the way of righteousness, in the paths of justice, granting an inheritance to those who love me and filling their treasuries. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his work, the first of his acts of old. Ages ago I was set up, at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. Before he had made the earth with its fields, or the first of the dust of the world. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep, when he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him. Like a master workman, I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, delighting in the children of man. And now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. Blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors, for whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death." You know, everybody needs a mother. It's interesting to note in some of the stories that might be considered rather masculine stories, the prominent role that women often play. Over the course of the winter, as we were reading, one of the books that we went through was Ben-Hur. You find that in the story of Ben-Hur, young Judah is forced to reckon with the bitter realities of life when a childhood friend returns to Jerusalem. And he comes back no longer as a friend, but he comes back as an enemy. He's no longer just a Gentile, but he's a Roman. And he's forced to reckon with this new reality, doesn't know how to process it. And young Judah's father had been killed when Judah was just a boy, and had died at sea. And so he goes back and he processes it with his mother. And the wisdom that he receives at her knee in this touching scene marks a transition in the life of young Judah from boyhood to manhood. And it's an exchange that couldn't have been more skillfully overseen by any father. This woman is able to transmit the wisdom that her son needs in order to shape his life and push him on. One of our movies that we'll enjoy as a family is a Walt Disney movie, Follow Me, Boys. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. It's an old Fred McMurray film. And there you have Fred McMurray. He's playing the character of Lem Siddons. And he retires from this band. They've been traveling around with an old college band. And He settles in small town America. It's pre-World War II. And he gets to be, you know, his aspiration is to be a lawyer someday. But he finds out that the town needs a Boy Scout troop just to keep the boys off the streets. And so he ends up leading the Boy Scout troop. And, you know, as only Fred McMurray can, in his ineffable way, he stumbles through and bumbles through trying to lead these boys in learning how to do woodcraft, learning how to do be courtesies and customs and so on. And actually walking them through the process from boyhood to adulthood. At one point in the story, one of the boys' dads is a drunkard, and he's dying of consumption. And as that scene plays out, the boy runs to the home of Fred McMurray, and he knocks on the door. And for whatever reason, Fred McMurray had botched it yet again with the boys. And the one that the child calls out for at this moment, this crisis in his life, is not Fred McMurray, the scout leader, but it's for Fred's wife in the story. And you see the transition in this young man's life as he comes into their home then. He's adopted. But moms play as crucial a role in the life and development of children, whether it's young women, young ladies to womanhood, or young men to adulthood. You know, when I was, oftentimes I've taken the time to go through the exercise of just going through my life and recounting who it is that God has put in my life to help shape my perspective on life. And I'm thinking as a man, so I think generally about men. And at the top of the list is my dad. But then I've taken some time over the years to jot down other names that have influenced me. Ted Weinberg, my boss. Larry Langmack, the school janitor whose son was in the grade older than me. And different ones that have helped shape my perspective on life. As I came to Mother's Day this year, obviously I spent some time thinking about my mother, thanking the Lord for my mother. But as I came to what we're going to look at today in Proverbs chapter 8, I started thinking about mothers beyond just my mother and thinking about the different mothers that God put in my life. There was Jane Parker, who watched me when I was in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and we ended up moving next to her. Jane helped to shape my life at a time when my mom was working out of the house, and I would get off the bus and I'd run up the street to Jane's house, and I knew that if mom ever found out that I had crossed Jane, I was doubly in trouble. Jane was, to me, at a very early age, a second mother. I loved her. I respected her. There was Cindy Hurd. My mom would go into work early. Dad would drive bus, and so going to the bus barn, he'd drop us off at Cindy's house. Shay was in my class, and so we would jump on the bus. We'd go to school together. He'd drop us off at 6:30 in the morning, and we would eat our Cheerios and review spelling words around Cindy's table. Cindy was a second mother to me growing up in those early years. There was Jackie Needfelt. Her son Edward was in my class. Jackie was the head of our Bible quizzing team. Jackie and I kind of went head-to-head a couple different times, and my mom drugged me over to Jackie's house and made me apologize to her. And she gave me a hug and talked to me just like a mother would. It was Bev Patterson. Paul was in my class. And I got to see from Bev Patterson what a widow at the age of 40 looks like. An amazing thing. And she leans on God in a way that was respectable. All these different people. There was Myrna Dinwiddie, my freshman year of college. Mom and Myrna would pray for me as I was acting like a stupid freshman. And that meant a lot to me, knowing that Myrna, somebody that I respected and loved along with my mother, was concerned about me enough for that. Over the years, there's been others. As we've been a youth pastor, there was folks like Annette Mansker who come with us on a missions trip. And just helped to mother the kids in the 7th and 8th grade as we took them into New York City. And she was a help to me and my wife being older than us and helping us do the job of shepherding young hearts. There was Eunice Eisenhower in that church who was in the nursery every week, and you turn your child over to that same one. I think of Ruth Gross here in our nurseries. And just how God has given us in the community of faith people who think like us, people who want what we want, people who are going the same direction, and it's important that we understand that everybody needs a mother. And we don't just need one. We need mothers in our lives. It can look like grandmothers. I think of when I was going to school, there was Martha Hall and Lillian Payne, my first grade and my fourth grade teachers. They weren't mothers, they were grandmothers to me. And boy, you did not mess up when they were on watch. Okay? You towed the line in a way that you wouldn't even tow the line with your mother. But there were ladies that God puts in your life that help you to do what you're supposed to do. When I think of my mother, I think not only of godly motherhood, but I also think of godly womanhood. She was what other women in my life were also striving to be. And with that, within the covenant community of Israel, as we come to the Old Testament, we're thinking the covenant community wasn't the church, the covenant community was Israel, and within that covenant community, the two roles were almost synonymous. Womanhood meant motherhood. Motherhood meant womanhood. They were that closely tied apart. There was no thought of choosing not to be a mother. In fact, the influence within the society was particularly tied to how well one mothered within the society. It's no wonder that Deborah rejoiced. It says in Judges chapter 5, "I became a mother in Israel." And others would seek her out for her wisdom and trying to understand, how am I supposed to do life in the context that God has given me? I need somebody older than me. I need somebody wiser than me. I need a mother. And from around the nation of Israel, people would come and seek out Deborah, not for Deborah. They would seek out Deborah for the wisdom that God gave to Deborah as a mother, one who shepherds hearts. This morning we saw in Proverbs chapter 9 that Lady Folly presents herself as a temptress. She's young, she's unfettered with the responsibilities of adult life. But Lady Wisdom, on the other hand, appeals from the vantage point of diligence, discipline, she's dignified. In short, she appeals not as a lover, but as a mother. And we'll find that wisdom is the matron of the community of faith. The repeated admonition in Proverbs is to heed a mother's instruction. And wisdom acts in a mother role in all of Israel. And every mother within Israel was expected to own wisdom. Every mother within Israel was expected to look like wisdom. Because what we find when we come to Proverbs chapter 8 is that wisdom provides five ideals of motherhood. Let's look at those very quickly this morning. The first ideal that wisdom models for us as a model mother is that wisdom takes every opportunity to tend to each child individually. Wisdom takes every opportunity to tend to each of her children individually. We see this in verses 1 through 5. Why does she do this? Because like every mother understands, a mother needs to initiate the instruction that her children get. Look at verses 1 through 5 here. Does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand beside the gates in the front of the town, at the entrance of the portals. She cries aloud, "To you, O men, I call. My cry is to the children of man. O simple ones, learn prudence. O fools, learn sense." Every mother understands that if those kids are going to learn, they're not going to learn by osmosis. They're not going to learn because they're going to pull a book off the shelf and learn it for themselves. They're not going to sit down at the piano and practice for hours doing it the proper way. They'll plink away as long as they can make progress, but as soon as it's not fun, what do? They quit. At least that's what I did. And I think I'm pretty typical for a kid. Moms know that kids need moms in their life to initiate instruction. And that's what we see wisdom is doing. In the first few verses, repeatedly, she's calling out. She's raising up her voice. She's crying aloud. In verse 2, it uses a picture. It says, she takes her stand at the crossroad. It's kind of like the idea of up in New York City. You got those guys who have their hot dog stands, and they are able to roll them around. They bring them up to the corner of their choice, of their choosing. They try to pick the right corner. They try to get there at the right time of day. They're trying to get in your way so that they can accept the most traffic at the right time in the right place. Mom, you know that you do the same thing with your kids. You strategically plant yourself so that you can intercept their lives where they need a word of instruction. That's what wisdom does for us. We see that she does this because every mother understands that instruction needs to intersect all of life. Look at the places where we find wisdom. Verse 2, she's on the heights beside the way. So we have a picture of a road. It's going down through the easiest part to travel, the lower part. And up on the hillside, there's wisdom. She's calling out as life's path is getting monotonous, perhaps lonely, and maybe even vulnerable to attack by those who are up above. And there's wisdom calling out. When I'm on life's path, just going, and life is getting boring, and life is getting lonely, and maybe even dangerous. But there's wisdom. We find her in verse 2 at the crossroads. That is, when we're faced with landmark decisions and opportunities. I've got a boy who's a junior, just about ready to be a senior. And we've got a lot of landmark decisions to make in the next couple years. Folks, you've had children that same age, you know what we're talking about. As we talk about getting driver's licenses, of graduating, of doing college, of looking for a spouse, of wondering what our career is going to be. These are landmark decisions. And wisdom plants herself at those crossroads where her children are going to have to make a choice and take up a direction in life. We find her in verse 3 that she's beside the gates in front of the town. That is, she's there when conducting business in the public square. She's like a mother watching over her son coming into the gates of town and reminding him, son, as you take your spot in society, as a member of this community, remember who you represent. Do it with wisdom. Don't be taken in. Don't let your hair down. Don't let your guard down. Son, you need a mother's voice. We find her there in verse 3, the second part of the verse. She's at the entrance of the portals. Anybody know what portals are? It's not a Hebrew word. That's an English word. I had to look that one up. A portal is a grand entrance. Probably, it could be either used to refer to the gates of the town again, the grand entrance of the city, she's there, or it could be a reference simply to doorways. So she's there in the public commerce as I'm doing business out in the public square, but she's also there when I engage in private friendships and seek private counsel. And she's there at the door reminding me, hey, be careful who you listen to. Oh, be careful little feet where you go. Oh, be careful little hands what you do. Oh, be careful little eyes what you see. And there's mother whispering. Whispering when I'm on the road, whispering when I'm at those choices to make, whispering when I'm in the public square, whispering in the private times of my life. There's mom. I need wisdom whispering into my voice because every mother understands that instruction needs to intersect every part of life. Why does mom need to take the initiative to deal with each child individually? Because every mother understands that while all kids need the same things, each child is different. That's why I think you ought to have more than one kid. Because you can be successful with the first one. And you can trick yourself into thinking that it's your fault. It's not. If you are successful as a parent, let me tell you, it's not your fault. It's not your doing. It's God's grace. You need another one to see that, you know what? You are just totally unequipped to do what God has called you to do. And you pull your hair out. You say, how am I supposed to do this? I can't. God says, okay, we finally got you where we need you. Now we can work with you in helping this child. Every child's different. And when you think you've got it pegged. So in this situation, here's what you do. And you pull the trigger, and all of a sudden, boom, it's broken. What happened? It worked the last time. It doesn't work with this one. Moms understand all kids need the same thing. And so we see in verse 5, She says, simple ones learn prudence. Fools learn sense. You need wisdom. You need sense. You need prudence. You need discernment. You need understanding. You need knowledge. This is what every child needs. But all of her children are in different places. Verse 4, she's calling out to the men. That is, the masculine leaders of the community. And especially, men who are leaders in community need wisdom whispering in their ear as they seek to make their own choices for them, for their families, for their businesses, for their town, for their country. But we see in the next phrase there in verse 4, she cries to the children of men. Sons of men, it's translated, but it's generic, speaking of genderless children, whether it's a boy or a girl. In fact, it could be even women. These are genderless and positionless in the community. Anybody who's a part of this community needs to listen to Mother Wisdom. Everybody needs it. But it doesn't matter which position you hold. You might be a leader. You might be in submission. You need this, what I have to offer. We see in verse 5 that there are simple ones. This is the naive, the inexperienced, the ones who haven't made a choice for right or for wrong. They don't know what right choices are. And so she's calling out to the simple ones. You, I have to deal differently than this person. The fool is the next one she calls to. The fool is the one who knows better and chooses to go the wrong direction. How do you deal with that kind of kid, Mom? Well, you deal with that one differently than you deal with the simpleton, the one who just doesn't know better. We call it childishness. They're just naive. They just don't know what. But the one who's a rebel at heart, you have to deal with in a different manner. Because all kids need the same thing, but every child's different. And every child's at a different place in the game. And so as Lady Wisdom models motherhood for us, we see that wisdom takes every opportunity to tend to each child individually. We come to verse 6, and we see that wisdom is primarily concerned with the value that her children place on truth. She's ultimately concerned about truth and the place that truth holds in their lives. The section begins with a command for a call to hear. It's the same word as what the Shema is in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Listen. It's a public and plural command. Y'all, pay attention. Anybody who's in the sound of my voice, listen up. I've got something to tell you. And as we move into it, the command is based on the nature of what is consciously brought into focus. She's going to focus on something, and she's going to focus on the positive aspects of this message. What is the positive message? She says there in verse 6, I will speak noble things. The idea is there, princely things, serious things, honorable things. She says in verse 6, from my lips will come what is right. The idea is even, level, smooth, easy. It makes sense what I'm about to tell you. She goes on and she says, all my words, all the words of my mouth are righteous. Verse 7, my mouth will utter truth, truth, truth. And this is at the center, the cornerstone of not just her message, but it's at the cornerstone of the society. You see, truth is that which is sure, it's reliable, it's trustworthy, it's stable, it gives stability to everybody as they interact with each other. Truth functions as the stabilizing foundation of this community of faith. And Mother Wisdom, speaking to all mothers, says, listen, ladies, you know what your primary instruction is for your kids? You've got to learn to teach them to love truth. They must, above all else, learn to love truth. Because when they understand truth, they'll understand that it's noble and it's ennobling. They'll understand that it's right. It makes the way easy. They don't have to hide. They don't have to be ashamed of themselves. He says a little bit later, my words are righteous. They're accurate. They're honest. They're just. They contribute to us as a community being able to commit to each other in loyalty. Moms, as you do the work of mothering, you have to spend a lot of time building up truth. You have to spend a lot of time showing the positive reasons why living the way that you've chosen to live, following God and following His footsteps, why that matters, why that's beneficial, why that's attractive, and why that ought to be attractive to your children. But you don't just focus on the positive. She also spends some time looking at the negative. The command is based on the negative nature of what they're consciously avoiding. So mothers need to bring into focus the destructive nature of what's evil. We see there in verse 7, "My mouth will utter truth, but wickedness is an abomination to my lips. The words of my mouth are righteous, and there's nothing twisted, nothing crooked in my words." She speaks of wickedness. She says, it's that which departs from justice, that which undermines the stability of the community. She says, wickedness is absolutely an abomination. It's repulsive to me. It has the idea of making me either physically or metaphorically sick. Sick to my stomach. I can't even stand the thought of what wickedness does to you, my child, and through you to the community that God has called us to establish. He says, nothing twisted, nothing crooked. That is, what I'm about to give you, you can use and you can prop yourself up on. It can be a cane, it can be a crutch, it can be a walker. It's something stabilizing. It's not twisted, it's not crooked. When you put your weight on it, you can put all your weight on it. It won't collapse under any weight that you give it. So lean on my instruction. It's not crooked, it's not twisted, it's right, it's true, it's proper. We move forward. And we see that the section closes with the benefits of hearing. Verse 9. "My words are straight to the one who understands. My words are right to those who in the end find knowledge." You see, understanding is gained when wisdom's words are found to be straight. That is, they're straightforward. They're easily accessible. And when wisdom makes sense, he says, now you've got it. Now you've got understanding. And when knowledge makes sense, when you find knowledge to be right, to be level, to be smooth, to be easy, to be attractive, he says, now you've got it. Now you've got the wisdom. Now you've got the understanding that I've wanted to transmit to you. The benefits at this point are experienced and discerned only after listening to what is heard. You saw what was the command up in verse 6? Listen. Y'all listen. Who's going to benefit from these words? Only those who listen. Only those who listen. And so wisdom primarily is concerned about the value that her children give to truth. And not just wisdom as a mother, but every mother within the community of faith needs to value truth and pass truth on to her children. A third ideal that wisdom models for us is that wisdom is concerned about how her children define success. Verses 10 through 21. "Take my instruction. Take my instruction instead of silver. Take my knowledge rather than choice gold. Wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her." And it's going to be a longer section here. She's going to reference several different things. But how is it that wisdom's children define success? She's concerned about that. You, mother, are concerned about that for your children. I know you are. One of the things that wisdom focuses on as a mother, as a model mother, is that wisdom says that true success is based on what one learns to desire and love. If you love the right things, I have very little concern for the paths that you're going to take. If you love the wrong things, I'm very concerned, even though your feet are temporarily on the right path, because your heart is a wandering heart. You learn to love the right things, child of mine, and you're going to be okay. Oh, you might make a misstep here or there, but you're on a path that leads to righteousness, that leads to life, that leads to eternal life. If you love the right things, I'm not concerned about you. But if you don't learn to love the right things, oh, my heart is so scared for you my child. She says, avoid the temporary wealth and the deceptive companions, the silver, the choice silver, she says in verses 10 and 19. Gold, choice gold, fine gold. She keeps on going. It says, jewels, verse 11. And then she wraps it up. Anything else that you can desire. Now, Proverbs chapter 8 follows Proverbs chapter... This is to see if you're awake. Proverbs chapter 8 follows Proverbs chapter... Very good, you guys. All right, thank you. You're still with me. All right. Proverbs chapter 7, Proverbs chapter 6, Proverbs chapter 5. They're not very fun chapters in the book of Proverbs. As dad lays out for his son and says, boys, listen, here's the kind of girl I don't want you to go after. Don't give your heart to this kind of a woman. She's like a Venus flytrap. Once she gets you, you're done. And so as he's wrapping up this list, as Mother Wisdom now is speaking to the boys, she says, boys, guard your heart. Don't let your heart chase after silver. Don't let your heart chase after gold. Don't let your heart chase after jewels. And anything else that can capture your heart. Mom's a little more diplomatic. Dad already said, like girls, okay, guard your heart. Because whatever else can capture your heart, nothing will have the payback that wisdom will. So learn to love the right thing. Avoid those things that are temporary, those things that are fickle companions. Instead, gain eternal wealth and trustworthy companions. Verse 10, take my instruction. Take knowledge. Find wisdom. Verse 12, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, knowledge, discretion. These are my companions. These are my traveling mates. These are the ones that I spend time with. You know what you find out as a child? Whoever your mom's friends are, they end up being your friends too. You better just hope they have kids, because if they're mom's friends, you're going to be spending time with these people over and over and over again. And as mom has a love and affection and an affinity for these friends, you gain an affinity and affection for these friends. And so mom opens her heart here. Lady Wisdom, as a mother, opens her heart and says, you know who my friends are? You know who my traveling companions are? Prudence, wisdom, knowledge, discretion. I love them. They're my sisters. And you need to love them too. Gain eternal wealth. Gain loyal companions. True success is based not only what you learn to love, but what you learn to hate. Verse 13. Here's what it means when God is real in your life. The fear of the Lord. God is more real than anything. The fear of the Lord looks like this. Hating evil. Pride, arrogance, the way of evil, and perverted speech. All of these things I hate. Child, I'm absolutely concerned about what you learn to love. Okay. And if you're loving the right things, you're going to chase it with all that's in you, and I want that for you. But you can only love the right things when you also hate the wrong things. Because the wrong things want to steal your heart from the right things. And so Mother Wisdom is instructing her children at this point and trying to help them to understand how to define success. True success is based on what I learned to love. True success is based on what I learned to hate. True success doesn't mean that I can't have worldly success. Oftentimes we think, so if you learn to love the right things, you learn to love God, you learn to love the Bible, then you're going to have to be a celibate missionary in Bula Bula. It's wrong. It's wrong thinking, and we know that. Okay. But when you love the right things, it doesn't mean that you're precluded from being able to have some sort of enjoyment and pleasure in this world. Look down in verse, 14? I have counsel. I have sound wisdom. I have insight. I have strength. Now look at this. Because they possess me, kings reign on their thrones. Rulers decree what is just. Because they have me, princes rule and make right rulings, nobles, and all who govern justly. You can have wisdom and have positions of influence. And when you do, you will use your influence in the right way to stabilize the community. Now, there's others who are in those positions who don't have wisdom. And it seems like so often they're the ones who get the better seats in power. But wisdom says, don't make that your goal. Make me your goal. And then whatever opportunities that God opens up for you, exercise wisdom. And when you get into whatever opportunity God opens up for you, it will be to stabilize. It will be to lay a foundation. It will be to build up rather than to tear down the society in which you live. You can have political influence. In fact, you can even have physical wealth. Verse 18. Verse 17, I love those who love me. Those who seek me diligently find me. Riches and honor are with me. Enduring wealth. Riches is coupled with what there? With honor. Okay. Is there a dishonorable way to obtain riches? There is. Okay. Wisdom says, you know what? Love me. Make me your first love. Make me your first pursuit. And I will enrich you. And when I enrich you, there'll be no dishonor with it. I will give you wealth, enduring wealth. But I will give you wealth in such a way that you will not have to compromise your righteousness. There's a way to get wealth that's unrighteous. And wisdom says, just because you choose wisdom doesn't mean that you have to give away all your wealth. It just means that you get wealth the right way. You use wealth the right way. But don't make wealth your pursuit. Make wisdom your pursuit. And regardless, if you have wealth or don't, choose wisdom. If you have positions of influence or don't, still choose wisdom. And learn to love wisdom. And learn to hate everything that would keep you from wisdom. We come down to verse 19, 20, 21, and we see that true success is evidenced over time. He uses first an agricultural metaphor. Verse 19, my fruit is better than gold, even fine gold, and my yield than choice silver. Back in the Midwest, oftentimes you hear the prices of corn or soybeans. And the big question is, so what's your yield? How many bushels are you getting per acre? The idea is, after you've spent all of spring disking and tilling and prepping that soil, you've plowed last fall, you've planted, and then you've cared and you've cultivated, and you've sprayed, and you've put all the work through the spring, the summer. It's got to fall, and you didn't get the rains, and you finally got the rains, and now you got too much rains, and you finally get to that place where you can get in the field. Everything's dried out, and you're able to get on the field, and you have a harvest. He says, you know what? When you choose wisdom, you might not see the payback today, but payday's coming. And you can only find out what the yield is if you wait it out for the long haul. But mark this down, there will be a yield, there will be a harvest, there will be fruit when wisdom is what you choose. He moves on in verse 20 and uses a traveling metaphor. I walk, I travel in the path of righteousness, the way of righteousness, the road of righteousness. I walk in the path of justice. The idea here is that my path that I take as wisdom leads me to no regrets. You ever taken a path that you wish you hadn't taken? If you live for any length of time, you have. Wisdom says, follow my footsteps, walk in my path, because my path is the path of righteousness. My path is the path of justice. And when you come to the end of the road, you can look back over your path and say, you know what? I wouldn't choose any other path. This has brought me exactly where I've wanted to go. He uses one more metaphor in verse 21. It's a legal metaphor. I grant an inheritance to those who love me. In fact, I fill their treasuries. He has the idea that the testator, this one who's given a will, when that one who gives the will dies and everything's revealed about the estate, you see that there's no minuses in the debit column, okay? There's only pluses. If you make wisdom your choice and you define yourself by the success that only wisdom can bring, when you come to the end of the road, you'll have no regrets. And when the books are opened, you'll see that in your column, there's no minuses. There's only pluses as she fills your treasury with riches that you could not imagine. How do you define success? Wisdom says it looks like wisdom. Loving the right things, hating the wrong things. A fourth ideal that wisdom does as a model mother is that wisdom anchors the future in the past. Here we have a little bit of a longer section. We're going to just kind of skim over this. Some have equated this part of the book of Proverbs with the person of Jesus Christ. In Colossians and in 1 Corinthians, it says that Jesus Christ is made wisdom to us who follow. The only problem with that is that Proverbs presents wisdom as a woman, okay? As a mother. It doesn't work. This isn't pointing to Jesus Christ, even though Jesus Christ was there. When the Father was creating, Jesus Christ was there. Let's look at verse 22. The Lord possessed me, the ESV says, at the beginning of his works. What does the King James say at this point? The Lord did what? Possessed me. Anybody have the New American Standard? What's that say? Possessed me? Okay. Boy, that didn't work very well. One of those, it might have been the New English translation. It has created, and there's been some debate over time. Is it possessed, the Lord possessed me, or the Lord created me? Let's look at a couple other of the verses as it's developed here. Verse 23, ages ago, I was set up. Verse 24, when there were no depths, I was brought forth. And end of verse 25, before the hills, I was brought forth. The idea is probably better translated at this point, not just that the Lord possessed me as an attribute of his own, but that God created wisdom and built wisdom and set up wisdom and brought forth wisdom as a fundamental building block in creation itself. So that creation is set up and built on wisdom. What we find that as wisdom functions as a mother, she anchors the future of her children to the realities of the past. And what her children become has a lot to do with who she is. She's an integral part of the created order. Verse 22, the Lord possessed me at the beginning. Okay. Uses a phrase that points back to that creation narrative. I was created, I was set up, I was brought forth. The idea is that wisdom is built into creation. And one writer says, wisdom in this passage is not the second person of the Trinity, nor does she personify an attribute of God. But wisdom personifies an attribute of creation. She's the personification of structure, of plan, of the rationality that God built into the world. She's created by God, and she's fundamentally an attribute of God's universe. And so Mother Wisdom says, you can count on me because I am a fundamental part of the structure, of the way God has done things. And she uses several different metaphors to help us understand. At the beginning of his work, when he's setting up his acts, before the beginning of the earth, and she starts at the bottom. The depths, the springs, the mountains, the hills, the earth. And verse 26, the last thing she says, even before the first of the, what? End of verse 26. Even before the first of the dust of the world. When we have the creation narrative, the only reference that we have to dust is the creation of man. Ah, and the Lord breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. Before there was even man, wisdom was built into place. And man made in the image of God is made to possess wisdom. And wisdom takes the dust And God in his wisdom gathers up the dust and brings it into an order so that it functions, it feels, it communicates, and it thinks, it responds, it takes communication, it has responsibility, because wisdom is built into the dust of the earth. You look in the mirror. You're a product of God building wisdom into the universe. What happens when man rejects the created order that's built into the universe? God says, "From dust thou art made, to dust you shall return." Wisdom says, "Listen, I have the potential to take you, child, and to shape you into something that God meant you to be. But if you reject me, beware. Because from dust you've come, and to dust you'll return if you reject God's created wisdom, his created order." She's essential to man's existence. Literally, she's older than dirt. But what her children learn to love then has a lot to do with what she herself takes delight in. Verse 27, "When God established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle, when he arched out, when he cut a plan to lay out the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies, when he established the fountains, when he assigned the sea its limits, the waters not to transgress a certain boundary, his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him. I was beside him as a master workman." The idea is that Mother Wisdom rejoices and takes pleasure in the fact that she has the privilege of accompanying God in his work. You know what, Mom? Your children are going to have the same attitude toward ministry, towards church, towards people, towards devotions, as you have. That's a scary thing, isn't it? If you love God's people, if you love being in church when the doors are open, if you love having your home open to those that you bring into your house, if you love spending time with others, if you love giving, your children are going to love it too. Because they see that you are excited about sharing with God and doing the work of God. Not that you can save souls, but you seek souls. And God does the work, and wisdom just gets to be along for the ride. She's rejoicing in the privilege of accompanying God in his work, and God is working through her. She rejoices in the pleasure of God's commendation. Verse 30, "I was beside him like a master workman, and I was daily his delight." Another way of translating it, I was daily filled with delight. But I was filled with delight. He was filled with delight with me. End of that verse, or the beginning of the next, I was rejoicing before him. So I'm rejoicing in the fact that God is rejoicing in me. I find pleasure in bringing pleasure to God. Can you say that, Mom? If you can, your kids are going to learn that from you as well. And then verse 31, she rejoices in this particular part of God's creation. "I rejoiced in his inhabited world. I delighted especially in the people that he made, the dust, the dirt balls that I get to rub shoulders with. And I get to see them transformed from clods to vessels fit for glory." What an amazing thing. Wisdom says, that's what I've learned to love. A fifth ideal that wisdom models for mothers is that she preserves and extends the community of faith by generating life. Verse 32. "Now, sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways. Hear instruction. Be wise. Don't neglect it. Blessed is the one who listens to me, the one who watches daily at my gates, the one who waits beside my doors. Because whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. All who hate me love death." This life that Mother Wisdom brings to the community is uniquely defined by humbly heeding instruction. This wisdom she has isn't her own. It's from God. Therefore, her children are repeatedly told to heed her instruction. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, sons, listen to your fathers and forsake not the instruction of your mother. My son, chapter 6, verse 20, keep your father's commandments. Forsake not your mother's teaching. In fact, Proverbs chapter 30, verse 17, the eye that mocks his father and that refuses or scorns to obey his mother, your eye will be plucked out by the eagles and eaten by the vultures. Pay attention to your moms. Young people, pay attention to what mom loves. Pay attention to what mom says. Pay attention to how mom spends her time. Pay attention to what mom warns you about. Because mom has a wisdom, and the only way you can get that wisdom is by listening. That's why so much of her effort is spent in instructing. In this passage, there's 9 different times she's calling, she's taking her stand, she's crying aloud, she's crying, listen, take my instructions, listen, hear, listen. 9 different times. You ever feel like a mom, you're saying, listen, didn't I tell, listen, listen. If so, you're doing the right thing. You're successful. They're not listening. Your success isn't necessarily gauged this moment on how well they're listening. Your success is gauged on if you're doing your job. Because they can't hear if you're not telling them, right? He says, don't get tired. Wisdom had to do the same thing as the model mother. Listen, listen, listen. Hey, hey, listen. Listen. But the life comes only when they learn to listen. That's why we teach our kids to sit. We teach them to sit still. Not just so everybody else can listen, but for the sake of their own soul, so they can listen. Life is tied to that. It requires hearing. It requires not neglecting. It requires, verse 34, watching at my gates, watching daily at my gates. This life is uniquely defined by the mark of God's blessing. Verse 35. Whoever finds me finds life. Verse 32, blessed are those who keep my ways. Verse 34, blessed is the one who listens to me. This blessing is the idea of everything that's necessary for life. It carries all the covenant code words of shalom, peace, righteousness, justice, chesed, that is loving kindness or steadfast love. Everything that I need to succeed within God's covenant community, I find through wisdom. This comes from being rightly related to God. Verse 35 says, when you get me, you get the blessing. This blessing comes because God has favor on you. Well, why wouldn't he? You love what he loves. You put yourself under the way that he's ordered this world. Wisdom says, learn to love the right things. Learn to avoid the wrong things. This life is uniquely defined by the consequences incurred by those who fail to obtain it. Verse 36. If you don't choose the right way, my son, understand this. That's your choice. But you've got to live with it. You've got to live with the consequences. He who fails to find me injures himself. The word there literally is he does himself violence. He's cutting himself. He's slicing himself. He's cutting himself off at the knees. You can do that. But the one you're hurting worst is your own self. All who hate me love death. Wisdom in this passage acts as the matron of the covenant community. Everybody needs a mother. You might be at a stage of the game when your mother's gone. You still need a mother. The blessed news is that wisdom is there to mother you through life's choices. The Bible does say Jesus Christ has become that wisdom that we need. Praise the Lord for the wisdom that God gives. But wisdom takes opportunity to tend to each child individually, and God does with us as well. Wisdom is primarily concerned that we value truth. Wisdom is concerned how her children define success. Wisdom anchors the future in the past, and wisdom preserves and extends the community of faith by generating life. Come to the end of this message. I want to read to you what one young man wrote about mothers this morning. I found it on a blog here this past week. He says, "My mother is my hero. My hero is a homemaker. Perhaps yours is too. Here are some honorable qualities that come to mind as I consider my mom. Her steadfast patience, her sustaining faith, her sacrificial service. Hats off to those real-life heroines. Hollywood boasts in the Avengers, but heaven boasts in the mothers. The trend is to scoff at the alleged worth and dignity of the stay-at-home mom. Her creator will vindicate her cause. Her lasting legacy transcends the scoffers. The enduring impact of all God-entranced women will eternally invalidate the demeaning larger culture. Contra the claims of many in this culture, mothers are irreplaceable jewels of dignity, value, intelligence, redemption, faith, preciousness, and eternal impact. My mother is, along with scores of Christ-loving mothers like her, a kingdom-building warrior, a disciple-making world changer. God is to be praised for gifting us with these steadfast, immovable, faith-filled mothers. As we tribute their lives, we glorify God for saving them and establishing them as bastions of society, bulwarks of the family, pillars of the church. I love you, Mom, and I love all moms like you." Everybody needs a mother. Why don't you spend some time thanking God for your mother today and reaching out to her and telling her how much you appreciate the impact she's made on you.